Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Darling, have no place to go. 610, hi, how are you?
Goodbye, baby.
Steve Cochran Show.
Yes, I'm going.
Show number 978. The people of Houston waking up this morning to no rain for the first time in days. But they are far from out of the woods. Ryan Burrow will join us coming up in about 10 minutes. Live from Houston. Cedar Bayou in Harris County, 52 inches of rain. That's the current unfortunate leader in just statistics that make no sense whatsoever. You know, it's the old cliche, right, Dave? If you made a movie and the movie was called Rain, and in the movie the plot was Houston will be hit by 50 inches of rain, people go, that's stupid. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's
it just happened.
This would be a disaster film. It's just unbelievable.
Hurricane Harvey, thousands affected by it, urgently need your support. You can donate and help the American Red Cross with warm meals, shelter, and hope to these families. An automatic donation of $10 from your cell phone at 90999, or you could donate to redcross.org, any amount you want, obviously, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to donate to Hurricane Harvey support. It's critical. And the Red Cross thanks you, and of course we do as well. Let's do the top six.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Men.
And we want to wish Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson good luck. He apparently is going in this morning for his kidney transplant, right?
Yes.
That's... And his son is the donor?
Yes. Yeah, that's what
so good luck to him. We'll keep you up to date.
He was in the office yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals, right, where you get a phone call and it's go time for whatever reason.
Is it scheduled?
This one was scheduled.
It is.
Yeah, because they all had to, you know, they had to do the lose weight program and all that, and they did schedule this. Yes.
Okay. Well, good luck. Harvey's record rainfall, 22 deaths now, and that death toll undoubtedly will go higher. The biggest rainstorm in the history of the continental U.S. is now moving into Louisiana with a lot of fury. Lake Charles, Louisiana, getting hit by heavy winds this morning and just merciless rain bands menacing Louisiana next. We will, again, talk to Ryan Burrow at 6:20, less than 10 minutes away right now. President Trump visited Texas yesterday and urged officials to make their response a model for the future. We want to do it better than ever before. And in the midst of all of that, he's taken a lot of criticism, which would be understandable if your expectations were higher. Mine aren't. I didn't expect any empathy out of a guy that's shown none. He didn't mention the police officer that died. He didn't mention the victims. He mentioned the first responders. And the fact is, he went. He was there. This goes to the theory, if everything is an outrage, nothing's outrageous. So you could be upset with the fact that Trump was not warm and fuzzy and huggy and all of that, but that's not who he is. He is a damaged human being, and I think he deserves credit for going as president. His staff ought to take heat if he wasn't properly prepared. Certainly he should have said something about those who are struggling, those who have died, the victims specifically. He shouldn't have made any of it about him or his crowd size. But what do you expect? We know who this person is. What else do you need to know? Next. President Trump also set to unveil his ideas for a new tax overhaul today. Republican efforts hope not only to reduce the bills of businesses, but also to prime the pump on investment and create jobs, increase competitiveness, promote growth. It's unlikely that Congress would be able to get anything done before the end of the year. Keep in mind, you know, talking about an ineffective, a clumsy goofball of a president. Well, Congress is a disaster as well. So if they could pull this off, that would be stunning. But look, miracles can happen, Dave. Miracles can happen. Look what happened in Springfield. We got a school funding bill.
That's right.
Yeah, our property taxes are going up, though.
Well, you can't have it all, Steve.
Oh.
Yeah, just if you would just leave your wallet at the door, we'll take it from there. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan yesterday sued the city of Chicago, claiming that Mayor Rahm Emanuel's reforms are not sufficient enough to prevent the Chicago Police Department from continuing a pattern of excessive force and deadly behavior that disproportionately hurts minorities. Mayor Emanuel has pledged to cooperate. They're trying to avoid the Justice Department essentially taking over the Chicago Police Department. That's only a slight exaggeration. So we'll keep you up to date on this. But Mayor Rahm Emanuel seems to be trying to meet him in the middle here somewhere so control is not wrested away from the city. This is interesting. General Mattis, the head of the Defense Department, froze the transgender policy that the president said had to go into effect, allowing troops to continue serving pending a study. This is the transgender issue. Not clear on how long that study will take, but transgender troops will not be removed from duty anytime soon. And Conor McGregor, who just lost to Floyd Mayweather, now may have a new battle on his hands. Michael Phelps has challenged Conor McGregor to a swimming race.
All right. I don't understand this. I
mean, well, Michael Phelps is racing sharks.
I know he's racing sharks.
Now he's racing boxers.
Okay, he's the most decorated Olympian,
yeah,
let alone swimmer in history.
Yeah.
Why would you race him?
To beat him within an inch of his life.
I mean, but Conor McGregor's not a swimmer.
We don't even know if he can swim, do we?
We don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it with the shark. He swims.
I guess and it turned out to be a mechanical shark, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's true. And they weren't even in the water at the same time.
Does he have a shark tattoo?
I'm wondering, with all those tattoos, would he be weighed down? Would that keep him from swimming fast?
I'd like to announce that I'm challenging Conor McGuire to a broadcast news-off.
Well, why don't you start by charging his name right?
Yeah.
Start by charging Conor McGregor.
McGregor, that's Conor McGregor. That's it.
But Conor McGuire could be a battle.
Right.
Conor McGregor has not responded, as far as we know yet, to this challenge.
So it's McGregor.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Did Phelps beat Greg Norman?
No, he didn't take on Greg Norman. All right, all of you go to your rooms. Ryan Burrow standing by, live in Houston. We've only got a couple of minutes with Ryan here, so let's jump right in. Has the rain stopped? Because that's what I'm hearing.
It did. The sun came out. It's, hopefully going to be a nice day today, a good day to get out and for these people to kind of start looking at some of the damage. There are still water rescues going on, though. It's important to note that many of the reservoirs flooded into these neighborhoods, and people aren't in the clear yet. Many are still being evacuated by boat. There is still a call for boat help. People are coming and volunteering and bringing their boats out for rescues, especially for senior citizens, the disabled, people who may be in dire need of that. The good news on the shelters right now is that, they had the big swell of people that were getting dropped off of the George R. Brown, and it looked like it was starting to turn into a real mess. 10,000 people there with a capacity of only 5,000. They've opened up the Toyota Center. That's the home of the Houston Rockets. They're going to start pulling people over. It's only a couple blocks away. So that is now going to operate as a evacuation shelter. They're also opening up Energy Park. It's near the football stadium. It's a little convention center, big one actually. They're going to house 10,000 people there near the where the Houston Texans play, and that's going to serve as a evacuation center as well.
What about the Joel Osteen Church?
Yeah, I'm back here this morning, actually, and it opened up to hundreds of evacuees, and it's also been a drop-off point for just tons and tons of supplies, whether it be diapers or dog food or clothing, and people have been coming by the truckload dropping stuff off, so a pretty amazing sight from that perspective.
And the dams are holding as of now?
You know, there has been some leakage above the top of these reservoirs, and that water, actually, we're being told, could last in some of these neighborhoods for a month. That's where the challenge is right now. Now that the water has stopped falling from the sky, it's trying to control it and manage it so that it flows back to the Gulf, without creating more damage. But likely this water is going to crest from these rivers in the coming days and weeks and create even more issues.
So they're far from out of the woods, but obviously you had to stop the faucet to begin with, and that's happened. So no more rain is a very good thing. The people of Louisiana are under the gun now, but for where you are in Houston, the very difficult work of going house to house and checking for people who are survivors it is probably already underway, I would assume.
Yeah, they're going to get under that process here pretty soon. They're still answering 911 calls. Those are still the top priority. But, yeah, as you mentioned, they haven't gone door to door yet. And, you know, the question is who was unable to make 911 calls. There could be – right now we've got a death toll of 11 that could go up significantly in the coming days.
It's Ryan Burrow live in Houston. We will check back with you as you continue with your duties at ABC as well. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Take care.
There you go. You know, the other thing I was thinking about, too, is this white towel system where if you need help to hang a white towel outside your house, a lot of the folks that died in New Orleans were older folks or people with handicaps who lived on their own. And you could be in a position, obviously, where you're unable to get to a white towel and hang it outside a window. So I don't know how these people that are on the first responders units and even the local neighborhood militias, if you will, I don't know how they avoid going house to house.
No, I mean, you look at different ways that people have asked for assistance. We talked the other day about social media, but you're right. I mean, it's so massive an undertaking. How do you possibly find
every building
person?
And yeah, it's even in the other towns. Can I just say my husband's uncle was rescued. He was in Fulton, which is near Rockport, I believe, and he's 88 years old. He's in a wheelchair in his own house, and he was rescued. We couldn't hear from him since Friday night, I believe. They couldn't find him or hear from him, and finally he checked in, I believe, Sunday, and he was at a shelter, severely dehydrated, malnourished, but he is fine. So he's on the road to recovery.
And if I'm remembering this correctly, in New Orleans, didn't they paint an X on the house?
They did. White X's.
And there was a coding, C-O-D-I-N-G, if they had checked the house or, sadly, if there was someone deceased in the house. And I don't remember what the coding was.
Yeah, they coded it differently for each house, whether it was empty, that, you know, it was clear, or there was still, you know, someone that needed to be removed. Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of those terrible days to come as they figure out where to go from here. The Louisiana weather forecast is not promising. As this blows through Lake Charles later, the winds will subside and then the rains will come. And we'll see how much power this storm has left. Again, the biggest problem here is just the speed of the weather system and the fact that it barely moves. So until the jet stream catches it and kicks it along at a higher rate of speed, breaks it down faster, and moves it into, it looks like the last track I saw was up to the Ohio Valley. It's going to continue to be a problem for Texas and Louisiana. It's now eastern Texas and western Louisiana. But the pictures from Houston continue to be amazing. There are no streets. You're looking at rivers in the worst areas. And one-third of the county that Houston lies in is underwater. So imagine if you took one-third of Cook County and put it underwater.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's 6:27. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get your big story in just a second. And Elise Glink will talk a little money with us today. We'll also talk about one of the coolest sporting events every year in town, or every other year, unfortunately, at this point. I'd love to see it here every year. It's the BMW Championship. More from Ryan Burrow in Houston later, Dean later, Karen Conti later to talk a little bit about the law. All that coming up on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money!
Elise Glink, standing by. ThinkGlink.com. Let's talk a little money. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you?
Dry. How are you?
Yeah, we're blessed, right? I mean, you know, we're not in Houston. We're not in Louisiana.
Yeah, we're not on the coast.
Let me have
the third coast, but not the other coast.
Let me ask you, when you take a major city's economy and turn it upside down, and the only the only rational example I could come up with, I suppose, would be New York after 9/11. But when you turn a major city's economy upside down, does it snowball to the rest of the country?
It can. I mean, I think a better example here would be what happened in New Orleans Katrina.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about that, and I visited about, I don't know, a year after the floodwaters had receded. So, you know, there, it, you know, they had the hurricane, there was a lot of rain, but it drained, which was important for New Orleans. And then the floodwaters broke. And once the floodwater, it broke the dam and it poured into the Ninth Ward, it literally wiped out the Ninth Ward. And so it took, I want to say, probably 8 years for New Orleans to really come back. When I was there a couple of months ago for a conference, I guess it's about 9 months ago, I was amazed at how the city had finally rebuilt. And so you can imagine New Orleans is a very small city, and what happened there was kind of in a localized area compared with what's happening here with Houston.
Yeah, I would agree with that a thousand times over. We're just talking about the fact that a third of the county that Houston sits in is underwater, and, you know, try to compare that if a third of Cook County were underwater.
Yeah, I think so everything stops, right? We've already seen Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the federal housing agencies, all of them have said, you know, just call us. You call your mortgage servicer, just tell them you're underwater, what county you live in. There's like 10 or 12 counties that they have listed that if you're in any one of those counties, we get it, and we're not going to, you know, you can have a 90-day out for paying your mortgage. Without penalties, you do have to call them, though. You know, so together, and this just gives you a little sense of the scale, they're covering 400,000 mortgage loans in the 18 counties that Harvey has hit. 400,000 there, and then there's another 200,000 homes that are being covered by HUD. And so just think about 600,000 homes, which probably accounts for about 1.5 million people, maybe even 2 million people, and you start to get a sense of how big this thing is actually scaled.
So what do flood insurance for the most part, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but flood insurance for the most part is too expensive for people to buy. Even people who live in flooded areas, which is why you see on the news all the time, I got flooded out 5 years ago, now I got flooded out again. It seems to be cost prohibitive for folks. But the insurance company models after Katrina, did they change to a point where they can handle something like this?
So I don't. This is being called unprecedented. So it doesn't really matter what your model looks like. It's never going to be big enough to imagine what happened here, because scientists are just trying to come to terms with two things. You know, you've got water that comes from the air, right? It's in a hurricane, and water that comes in from a seawall that floods in. And so if you're a low-lying coastal area, like in Houston or like in New Orleans, you're just going to get a huge wall of water that comes in, and so the water that falls from the sky can't recede. And if they start letting out dams and other things that are around Houston, like they've been doing, to prevent them from breaching, you get even more water that's coming in that you can't cope with. So that's the first thing about the modeling. But what's interesting about the flood insurance, and I want everybody to understand, is first, your regular homeowner's insurance does not cover this kind of flooding. And we've seen this in Chicago. We've had a couple of years where we had like 17 inches of rain in 24 hours. It was kind of crazy. And everybody got flooded out. When you have a rising tide of water, that is specifically excluded. What is covered is if your sump pump fails. So that's
what you need. And I know this from experience. You need a rider on your policy to cover that.
Yes, you have to specifically request it, you pay extra for it, and it's completely worth it, because some pumps do fail about every 8 to 10 years, and you have to make sure that you change the battery and things that people forget. But
so for people to understand, regular homeowner's insurance will not cover a natural disaster like a normal flood caused by rain or the conditions you're talking about.
Correct. And so to cover yourself, the National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP, which has been around since 1968, was developed. And it was developed so that homeowners could buy sort of over and above flood insurance. This covers this insurance, which is supported by the government. So basically, the price has been artificially depressed for years and years and years. And this is where the problem has come up. It's been depressed for years so that people can actually afford to buy it, because the government, for the first $250,000 of losses, the National Flood Insurance Program, which you can find at flood.gov, And you have to buy 30 days in advance. Nobody in Houston can buy it now. But it's artificially depressed the prices, so it would be affordable. And then above that, you can buy private insurance. Chubb offers a very expensive policy that goes up to, I think, $5 million or something. So you can actually buy other kinds of private insurance to go on top of it. But here's the problem. Because the flood costs are so staggering, and if you look at what's happened over flood costs, they're growing exponentially. Because you think about how much it costs to fix something like Houston, like a city, the fourth largest city. And what you realize is that $250,000, while good, if you're only paying in, maybe $1,000 a year for $250,000 of coverage, that's not going to work. And so the flood insurance program, NFIP, is underwater itself, just to use that little pun, by $25 billion. That means that every year it's running in the red, and when you have one of these historic catastrophic events, it really goes in the red.
All right, so does this break the back of that program, and does this break the back of the insurance companies who have engaged in insuring folks over and above the 250?
So it's funny. It doesn't break the back of the NFIP because guess who backstops it? We do, taxpayers. And this has been the rub for Republicans for a really long time.
But
Believe
is this separate
not,
from the FEMA money, the flood insurance program you're talking about? That's not part of the FEMA program, right?
It's sort of part of FEMA.
It is.
FEMA deals with the disaster relief. Mm-hmm. Flood insurance, though, is I think it falls under the line of FEMA. Okay. On sort of a large grand scale. Here's the thing. It expires on Friday, the whole program. And you may remember the Biggert, we talked about this probably, two, 3 years ago. They've extended it year by year because what's happened is if you actually priced this, and this is a very funny Republican-Democrat sort of thing that's going on in D.C., ha-ha, but if you actually priced this flood insurance where it should be, it would probably cost homeowners who live on the coasts $30,000 to $40,000 a year,
right,
which is completely unaffordable for almost anybody, and I'm seriously except multi gazillionaires. So you can't afford to buy the NFIP flood insurance unless it's artificially depressed. On the other hand, why should the rest of American taxpayers pay for people to live on the coast and rebuild their homes over and over again, right?
Right. Well, we'll pick that up right after traffic because that's a very fair question. So stand by. We'll pick that up in just a second and remind people that if you have folks living in the Houston area in the middle of all of this with probably limited to no internet access, they've got to file by Friday. Stand by. We'll have Elise explain that, too, coming up. Sponsored by Grandview Homes. Let's get traffic, Mary. Elise Glink is with us. All right, so let's pick it up where we left off. The federal insurance program for flood insurance is expiring Friday. So that means people in Houston have to do their paperwork and file by Friday?
No.
Oh, it doesn't mean that.
No, it doesn't mean that, but which is good because I'm sure nobody would be able to do it. They do have a very short period of time to file and let them know that there is an issue, but I think that will all end up getting extended. That hasn't
it has
even been.
To. I mean, nobody. Who's got online access? Nobody.
No, nobody has it. What does expire on Friday is the whole program. So you wouldn't, unless they do something in the next 2 days to extend this, nobody would be able to buy flood insurance going into the hurricane season, which is now through December. I mean, this is a very big, very early hurricane, and we've got other storms, tropical depressions that are on the way. And the flood insurance program in its entirety would expire on Friday. So that's sort of a big thing, and now everybody's attention in Washington, D.C. is focused on this because everybody's been fighting, and what they've been trying to do is come up with some sort of calculation where they shrink the footprint of what's covered by the NFIP and the flood insurance program and the discount that's given to homeowners if they're in a flood zone or what's considered a flood zone. Raise the premium somewhat and figure out some sort of calculation that seems like it will be less painful. But there's no less painful here, and this is the problem, is they've let it go so long. The last 12 years, we have seen the costs for these kinds of disasters literally skyrocket maybe 20 times what they've been. And if you look at a map, and I wrote a white paper about this a couple of years ago, if you actually look at the damage caused by floods over the last flooding, hurricane, tornado, rain, whatever you want to call it, and you look over the last 50, 60, 70 years, you get kind of a general, you know, growth rate, right? Normal growth rate. And then all of a sudden, it's a hockey stick, and it goes shooting up over the last 10, 12 years. And what you asked, your original question was, what does that mean for the rest of the country? And it means a couple of things. If people probably don't remember this, but we had a shortage of building materials after Katrina hit New Orleans that drove up the price and the by significantly of the cost of new homes. And it slowed down the number of new homes that could be built in other places around the country because all the resources were pouring into New Orleans. Well, we have a situation now that's even worse than that because, you know, 15 years ago, we actually had more people in the home building industry. We were building many more homes than we're building now. This year, we might build 550,000 new homes. But 12, 15 years ago, we built over a million new homes. So we're not building as many homes. Far fewer people are in the trades. We're not manufacturing the same level of building materials. And now everything that is being made will be pushed to Houston. And so there could be an effect on what's going on in the rest of the country, just in terms of this one little thing, building new homes.
So this is where the dominoes start to fall then, right? Because that's where costs go up for everybody.
Yeah. Costs go up for everybody. Again, we've talked about this, but a large percentage of the people who build new homes are not always U.S. citizens. They are people who come from other countries legally and not to who are good at building trades and they build houses. That's already been cut back, and the new home building industry has been very worried about the number of people who are trained to go in and actually build new homes. They just can't get the help that they used to get. They're paying a lot more for it. And so one of the reasons you're seeing home prices rise dramatically for the cost of new homes is they're having to pay the labor more, which sounds like a good thing. And it's not a bad thing. It's just that there are so few people who are really trained to properly lay tile. And, you know, you don't want a badly built house, frankly, or it'll come right down again.
All right, let's loop this back to something you said right before the break, and that was the fact that the rest of us shouldn't have to pay for people living on the coast if they choose to live there. They're taking the risk, and how do we mitigate that cost? You've discussed it in regards to the government picking up a more equitable balance between the two, but is that number a real number that could exist in the world we live in?
So the realtors say that if you price flood insurance for coastal homeowners at $40,000 apiece, regardless of how much the house is worth. I mean, it's one thing if your house is a $5 million house, and if it's $90,000, you know, paying $30,000, $40,000 a year just basically means your house is worthless. And so you won't be able to sell it at any price. You wouldn't even be able to give it away. And so realtors' point of view is don't do that because it's really bad for our economy, meaning your economy. But there has to be a change because the rest of us are paying the bill for the $25 billion, which is not a big deal in a $14 trillion economy. But it's interesting that it's now Republicans who you'd think this would rankle more than anything else. They're the ones saying, yeah, well, let's slow down. Let's not do it. Why? Because Louisiana is a red state. Florida is a red state. Texas is a red state. And that is where the vast majority of homeowners who qualify under this program actually live. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and it goes to show one thing, and that's the world's gray. And that's why the extremes in both parties need to shut up. Because it's not all right, it's not all left. The truth always lies somewhere in the middle, and that's certainly the case in this story.
Agree completely.
Elise Glink, FakeGlink.com. Thank you for all of that and the education, and we will talk to you soon.
You bet. Thanks.
Fake Glink, would you? Go ahead, Fake Glink, FakeGlink.com. News next, and then we'll talk about the BMW Championship coming to Conway Farms in about 10 minutes. Back after the tournament doesn't start in 10.
I was wondering, we'll talk about it in 10. I was going to have to run right
get
out
there.
Get on
the tee. Back in a moment at 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
And this is going to culminate just the second wire-to-wire winning performance this season, joining Jordan Spieth, who did it at the Masters.
There is a new number one in golf, and for the first time, Jason Day is on top of the world. with a win at the BMW Championship.
That was 2015. Conway Farms welcomes the BMW Championship back in just a couple of weeks now. And Vince Pellegrino's here. Vince is, well, he's got many titles, some of them relating to golf. Tournament director, is that the one I should use most with you?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Nice to see you, as always. One of the great things about the BMW Championship is it benefits Evan Scholars. For people not familiar with it, and again, for those of you who go, oh, good, Steve's talking golf again. Listen, the Evan Scholarship Fund is beyond just another way for us to talk golf. This is one of the most important philanthropic things you can get involved with. So explain who Mr. Evans was and the legacy of this.
So Chick Evans is the founder of the scholarship. In,
was it '30s?
He was in the '30s. Yeah. Actually, in 1916, he won the U.S. Open and the U.S. Amateur in the same year. And
you covered that, didn't you, Dave, in 1916?
No, I started in 1918.
Oh, it was 18. Okay.
So he was the first player to do that. He remained amateur. He did it before Bobby Jones. Okay. He remained amateur. All the proceeds that he made from those events, he deferred them. And ultimately, his dream was to start a caddy scholarship. And he went to Northwestern for a couple years. He couldn't finish school because of funds. And so his dream was to fund this caddy scholarship, which started in 1930. And since then, we've given away over 10,000 scholarships to well-deserving caddies who need the financial aid.
These are 10,000 people who got a college education because they worked hard as great caddies. They were recommended by golfers, and they went through the process, and they won these scholarships and had college paid for. And, of course, one of them is Dr. Kevin Most, our medical expert.
Absolutely. I received the scholarship myself, Dr. Kevin Most. Sam Allen, who's the CEO of John Deere, is an Evan Scholar.
There you go.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of scholars out there, over 10,000, like I said. And this fall, close to 950 kids are receiving the scholarship at multiple universities throughout the country. So we're really proud of that. And really, all the proceeds, as you mentioned, of the BMW Championship benefit the scholarship. So if you attend the tournament, you buy a ticket or hospitality, it all goes towards this great cause. And you know, it's we want to grow the scholarship to get up to 1,000 kids in school by 2020, and I think with everybody's help, we can do that.
Who gets to make the calls to tell those kids that they've won the scholarship?
Well, we actually send them a letter, and
that should be a phone call, just so you can bask in the glory.
Well,
you can hear the kid whooping it up.
We'd like to capture that on video at some point, but really, I remember when I received the letter, you open it up, you know, with your parents, and you know, it's a life changing moment when you get that letter from the scholarship. And you know, I mean, there's a process to get the scholarship, and you go through a series of interviews with our directors and people who are donors and who are close to the program to interview the kids to award them the scholarship. So it's incredible.
And we all know this, but caddying is one of the great jobs you can have because it teaches you about how grown ups talk to each other. It teaches you about honor. It teaches you how to interact with people who you don't necessarily know. It gives you the boss-employee relationship, probably for the first time in your life. And it's great physical exercise on top of all of it.
Well, and you learn the value of a dollar.
Yeah.
and hard work and getting up every day in the summer. And I remember riding my bike to the golf course. And
where's your caddy?
I caddy at Riverside Golf Club.
Yep.
And, you know, rode my bike from Westchester and caddied and, you know, did that every day over the summer. And it was, you know, if I hadn't received the scholarship, it was still an incredible summer job for kids to have.
Was a young Larry Wirt playing at Riverside?
He was, yeah, for sure.
What kind of a tipper was he?
He was great. He was great.
Are you saying that because you're in the building he still runs?
I am, yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Just curious, Jess. BMWChampionship.com is where you can get tickets.
Get dressed, you're playing golf today.
No, I'm not, Grandpa. I'm playing tennis.
You're playing golf and you're going to like it.
What about my asthma?
I'll give you asthma.
Vince Pellegrino's here, tournament director for the BMW Championship. We'll check back in with Ryan Burrow in Houston before 8 o'clock. And Vince, nice to see you as always. We're talking about the Evans Scholarship Fund, and I'm lucky enough to play golf at the beautiful White Eagle Golf Club. And for any of you club members around the city in Chicago, start nagging your members. Everybody could kick in and help the situation out. If you love golf and you benefit from a a great caddy program. This is how to pay it forward and do the right thing by way of the game. And how lucky you are to be playing golf when the rest of the world's working. So, by the way, Vince and Dave, I don't have a chance to tell you this or Mary this. There's a new study out that says that the maximum amount of creative work a brain can do in the day is 4 hours. So when I leave at 10 o'clock to play golf, I don't want to hear anything out of you two because obviously I've done a full day's work.
Well, you could save an hour.
Science has spoken on this.
And why do we have an eight-hour day?
Listen, that's not my problem.
Yeah, exactly.
At 7:24, Vince, this tournament, the BMW Championship, is one of the biggest all year. It leads up to the Tour Championship in Atlanta the week following. So talk a little bit about the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think the field is phenomenal. I mean, if you look at the FedEx Cup points, it's basically the top 70 players in the FedEx Cup points. They're in Boston this week, so they've got 100 players. We're gonna ultimately get to 70 after this week. But just looking at the top players right now, Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth are 1 and 2. I mean, they battled it out last week in New York, and what an incredible performance in that playoff. But Justin Thomas, who won the PGA Championship, yep. you've got John Rahm and Ricky Fowler up on the leaderboard. Brooks Koepka, who won the U.S. Open this year. A lot of really good, young, talented players, and I think it's a really exciting time for golf where there's not really one guy who's moving away from everybody else. I mean, you've got Rory still, you got Jason Day, as I mentioned, you got a lot of these younger
guys.
It's
a 4 day battle.
It should be great, and there's no cut too. So you have all 70 right. players all 4 days. They'll be all there all weekend, so you don't have to worry about having somebody miss the cut. So it's a great format in that the playoffs, what they were meant to do is bring the best players together at the end of the year to compete for, you know, for some significant prize money, but also for the FedEx Cup. So I think it's working out.
And I think the players have done a nice job of embracing this concept over the course of the past. How many years now?
This will be the 11th year.
How about that? Doesn't seem like it's been that long.
No.
But for 11 years, the players have done a nice job of embracing this and treating it like their playoffs.
So. Yeah, the first year was 7 at Cog Hill. And then we were at Belrive in 2008.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's talk about seeding because you've made some changes this year.
We have. We've got some pretty exciting opportunities. For the first time, we've got greenside tickets. So people can actually select their seat on the 18th green. So when the leaders come through, you know, Saturday afternoon or Sunday, we've got tickets. So I might want to walk around the golf course and watch a group, but I know when I come back to 18th, I've got my seat. So those right. are greenside seats, incredible opportunity that's
cool
brand
idea.
New for us this year, which I think will be a trend on tour, you know, going forward. That's one opportunity. We've got a really cool individual hospitality opportunity this year that's called our Green Coat Club.
Yeah, I don't know this. Explain this to me.
Yeah, so what this offering is, it's a high-end premium first-class hospitality venue that it's on the 18th tee, 11th tee. It's got views of 18, 11, 12, 13.
Sure.
And you get valet. So that's the first part. You
it's
get
a great spot. The 18th right comes uphill.
It's par 5, goes right uphill,
yeah,
you're at the tee.
But you're at that spot behind the 18th tee, which is probably the best viewing spot for the golf course, isn't it?
Well, it is. You've got panoramic views of 18, the par 3, 11th, and they both share the same tee.
Yep.
And then behind you've got 13, and then to your right you've got hole number 12. But
you'll see a lot of players.
The beauty of this venue is that we're partnering with Gibson's Restaurant. So when you walk into this venue, you're going to be able to sit down, order off of a menu, so you'll have wait service, and then on the exterior we have tables where you'll have wait staff come by with drinks and afternoon appetizers and hors d'oeuvres. It's really a high end opportunity, and for somebody who's just looking to entertain a couple people, some of your best customers, this is an incredible spot. And did I mention valet?
Yes, you did. And that's
do you need to wear a green coat?
You don't. You know, we just call it that because that's our Western Golf Association directors are the green coats and represent the Evan Scowers Foundation and Western Golf at their clubs.
I never asked you about this. The green coat and the green jacket. The green jacket tradition at the Masters. Which came first?
Good question. I believe ours did because we were founded in 1899.
Yeah.
There's just maybe a little bit more important to put on if you win the Masters.
Yeah, but I was wondering, Bobby Jones probably inspired by that, I would think.
Potentially. I'm not really sure what the background is.
Well, let's
is.
Start that rumor. Anyway.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Is there seating, Vince, at 18 if you don't have the reserved greenside seats?
There is. So there's plenty of seats right directly behind the green. We've got actually another seating golfers left of the 18th green where you can see the entire hole. Because as Steve said, it's a par 5, so you can see the second and sometimes third shots into the green from this platform, which is immediately adjacent to the BMW Experience, which has some incredible activities going on.
And as far as other spots on the golf course, where do you recommend?
I really like 18th tee as well. So golfers left of 18, we've got a huge grandstand. And as I mentioned, you can see right across to number 11. There's a concession stand right there. There's restrooms. It's really a nice spot. And if you want to venture out on the golf course a little bit, I like the 7th hole. It's a drivable, sometimes drivable, par 4. We've got a grandstand, concession stand right behind the grandstand. It's a really neat spot, and it's a little bit further on the golf course, but it's worth getting out there.
And I'd say, too, if you're able, it's a very walkable golf course, and if you got a group you want to follow or a couple of groups you want to follow, it's a great exercise day for you as well, and you can get all over.
Yeah, I mean, I think immediately when you show up to the championship, you've got holes 1 and 2 where you enter, and there's seats on 1 and 2.
Right.
And then ultimately, just following the groups, it's not a difficult golf course to walk and get around.
It benefits, again, the Evans Scholars, which is a cause that I'm quite fond of and I hope you'll support. Website for you guys in general for all things throughout the year is what?
It's WGAESF.org, but for the tournament, it's BMWChampionship.com.
And you link to the Western Golf website, I'm sure, off the BMW
Absolutely.
Site.
Yes.
Yes, Dave.
I know in the past you've run shuttles from the Lake Forest train station. Is that the case again?
Yeah, that's great to bring up. We've got a pickup and drop-off point, so if you want to take Uber or Lyft or a cab or have somebody drop you off, the Lake Forest train station on the west side of town is the spot to do it. We've added trains, so if you want to take the train, you can check on the BMW Championship website. We've partnered with Metra to add some train lines. So a lot of ways to get to the championship, and of course, if you want to drive, it's complimentary parking at Great America.
And can you take a golf cart? Do you have golf cart parking if I just roll in on one?
Well, you might have to bring your own key and just steal somebody's if that's what you that's what you want to do.
Now, I will say this, and I was one of my sources told me this, and it makes total sense. Let's say you're not necessarily into golf. It's not your major thing. This is phenomenal. People watching, we know that. But we're told that if you're a single female, it's a great place to meet a dude.
Right. Well, it's a great social atmosphere,
and
we've got video boards in our beer garden. You can watch college football or NFL on Sunday. We actually have something new this year. It's BMW's partnered with Top Golf Crush.
Okay.
So even if you're a novice golfer, you can go out there and hit golf balls on the driving range at Conway Farms, and it's a 5-ball challenge. You get 5 shots into targets on the range. It's the first time it's been done.
Like the Top Golf?
Like the Top Golf. We've brought it to the championship. It's the first time it's being done on tour. And you can win prizes and compete against other PGA Tour pros who are going to be out there hitting golf balls as well.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great week. Starts when?
It starts September 12th. Is that Tuesday? And it goes through the 17th.
And for people who want autographs and stuff, the Pro-Am, they can still sign, right?
Pro-Am's a great time to get autographs. The pros are laid back. They want to sign autographs, take pictures, and it's just a real laid-back, comfortable atmosphere on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
But
nice.
Steve will sign any day during that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I usually wait outside and go, does anyone need anything? And I have a pen. I'm looking forward to it, pal. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
It's the BMW Championship, one of the great Chicago sports events, and glad to have it back this year. And congrats to everybody in advance out of Conway Farms. All right, quick break. We're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
We're just out here, you know, trying to help as best as we can get victims out of their homes into shelter, dry shelter.
This is a catastrophic event that I don't think we've seen when the Weather Channel starts creating a new color for rainfall.
But y'all sit here, y'all trying to interview people during their worst times. Like, that's not the smartest thing to do.
And so for all the Monday morning quarterbacking out there, you can't talk about hindsight, because there is no hindsight in terms of an event that's never occurred.
Ryan Burrow standing by in Houston, where he's been for the past several days. I haven't asked you how you holding up in the midst of all of this.
You know, we're dry. We got a hotel room. I can't complain. I really can't. I mean, there's just so many people who have done, you know, gone through so much. I mean, it's hard to say, oh boy, you know, I'm getting 4 hours of sleep a night, and these people are getting no sleep. So, you know, it's
Well, that's the right attitude.
You've covered
I mean, you've covered a lot of stories. Have you ever seen anything like this one?
No, I've never covered a natural disaster quite like this. I mean, I spent like 6 days in Charlottesville, but that was not nearly the extent and mass as this is. So, but it's been fine. And these, you know, like I said earlier, I think yesterday, you know, I get to go home. This is what they'll have to live in for the next several weeks and months. So it's small price to pay.
And were the people in Houston aware of the Trump visit yesterday, which was further from them, or are they just too busy just trying to live?
Yeah, no, it was very, very low on their priority list.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I mean, it was from a news perspective, we didn't even know what would be coming of it. We were told by the White House, obviously I'm in Houston, but we're getting messages through ABC that he may not even speak. So we were going to cover it as best we could. And, you know, he obviously had that forum in Corpus Christi and then went to Austin as well. He can't come here yet. I mean, the roads are just too impassable, but probably will eventually. At some point, make his way here and reassure the people that federal aid will continue and they won't be forgotten. And every now and again, a community needs that kind of boost. And we'll just see what the appropriate time for the president to bring his motorcade here and make these rounds will be.
Set the stage for us a little bit by way of trying to visualize the geography of this. Would we go to Houston for people that have been there and go, well, of course the water can't go anywhere. It's just flat and concrete, or is that an overstatement?
No, it's pretty much it's bayous and concrete. I mean, that's what this city is. There are a few ways to dump this water into the Gulf of Mexico, and that's where that's what will have to happen. And unfortunately, that's not going to happen for some time. The Buffalo Bayou, one of the areas that seems to have the biggest issues around with housing, is expected to rise another 1 to 3 inches today, just as water kind of funnels and channels into it, and that's not going to be good for the people who live in the area. This, as the rain stopped, the water rescues will continue, perhaps thousands of people still stranded, not necessarily as in desperate need as they were before, but people stranded nonetheless. And this water's got to get to the Gulf of Mexico, and the Gulf of Mexico is full right now. So, it's basically two big bowls of water sloshing back and forth.
Any word on the two dams since we last spoke and their structural integrity?
No, haven't seen anything. It looks as though maybe some of the concrete is starting to break off of one of these levees that leads to a river. We're just getting a little bit of information. I haven't been quite briefed on all of that yet, but hopefully we'll get some more information coming up here
and
later.
As far as house-to-house rescues, whether it's locals in boats or, you know, the authorities as we know them, is that process underway?
They're still going through the process of answering 911 calls. There are hundreds of them still in the queue. That's going to be the first priority before they begin the process of going through house to house. And the house to house is probably going to be something that FEMA is going to coordinate because they're going to need people from, you know, there are plenty of volunteers from FEMA coming, and that's what their process is going to be. And now that the floodwaters may start receding after, the rivers and waterways crest, that process will get underway. But right now, the death toll officially at 11. I know that there are numbers out there that are much higher than that, 18. But this is what's being confirmed right now by county and state. There have been families that have come out and said we have dead family members as well. So the number will probably go up, but 11 is what we have officially right now.
And as firefighting and policing and all of that, has there been less looting than expected and less fires than expected?
You know, you're going to get the knuckleheads. They did arrest some guys who were trying to loot a GameStop store. There were some people arrested for trying to commit assaults on evacuees. Police are going to be out on the lookout for that. Although their first priority is rescuing people, they do have to still police these neighborhoods of 6.5 million people. We know that in many cities, the looting of a GameStop or the assault of evacuees or people is not as big of a story. But here they're actually going to prosecute even stiffer if you're trying to take advantage of this situation. And the prosecutors have already come out and said that.
Well, that's not a bad thing. We need a civilized society there more than ever. We have encouraged folks to go to the Red Cross as their primary way of donating to help. Is that what we should continue to do?
Yeah, they're making physical donations here, but Red Cross is the best way to go as far as getting them the money they need. And you say, well, is that money being spent the right way? Well, they've got to use that money to open up other locations for people. There's information they need to get out, resources they need to get out. So that's probably the best way. Hey, Dave Ennett, are you there?
You're sitting right
here?
Yes,
I am.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, because I came in during your sportscast there, and I was thinking, remember in, I believe it was 2008, when the Astros were flooded out of their ballpark, and they played it at Miller, and do you remember what happened?
Yes, Carlos Zambrano threw a no-hitter for the Cubs.
Yeah, maybe the Rangers should have thought about that, huh?
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's a great point. Not thinking. And there you are, up to your neck in water, still getting it done. Ryan Burrow. Ryan, nice job by you as always, and really appreciate the effort. I know it's your job, but I just want to say thank you for all the good work you're doing.
No problem, guys. Take care.
There you go, Ryan Burrow, and we'll continue to hear from him in that area. All right, let's shift gears here for a second, because this is not an easy time for anybody. I think the only thing that could make us feel better right now is a rousing round of Match Game.
Oh, that would be great.
So the dry erase boards are being handed out. He won't let us touch his long microphone, and I think you know what I'm talking about. But we will get to a Match Game in just a second. If you'd like to play Match Game with us, and it's exciting host John DeCosta, please get on the phone now, 312-981-7200. We need two contestants, the 312-981-7200. You'll, of course, have to get by Sandberg. Hurricane Harvey, thousands affected by Hurricane Harvey, urgently need your support. Help the American Red Cross provide meals, shelter, to the families affected, but to everybody in the zone of trouble there. Donate today to Hurricane Harvey by going to redcross.org and donate to the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, redcross.org or 1-800-RED-CROSS. You can also make an instant $10 donation simply by texting Harvey, H-A-R-V-E-Y, to 90999. All right, John DeCosta is here. John, it's Match Game time. Nothing like the copyrighted version on the Game Show Network. If you're going to sue us, get in line.
Yeah, we're spelling match a different way.
We are. We're spelling it with the silent K.
Right.
all right, so take it away. Our first contestant is Ron.
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Hi. How are you guys?
Good, good.
I believe, is this Ron from the north side?
That is Ron from the north side.
Yes, it is.
All right, so Vandeveld, Dave, and I are ready to try to match.
Actually, Mary is also playing.
Ron's answer. Mary's going to play as well.
Yes.
Sandberg.
Mary Sandberg, I apologize. Ron, where are you calling us from?
I'm from the north side.
Oh, okay, good.
Stay with us here.
I know. I was just, that was, I thought I'd get the eye roll if I did that. I was like, come on, I didn't get the eye roll. Ron, you know how the game is played?
Yeah.
Okay, real simple. I'm going to give you this phrase. Fill in the blank. Let's see how many of our celebrities you can match. Here you go. David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage said to Ross Cochran, "It's a flipping closing. I thought you would bring a pen, not blank." David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage said to Ross Cochran, "It's a flipping closing. I thought you would bring a pen, not blank." Your answer, Ron?
A blank look on your face.
Okay, thanks for playing, Ron.
all right, hold on, Ron. Let's see if we can get some matches.
That's good. A blank look on your face. I don't think we have enough room on the board for all of that, but let's give it a shot. Let's start with Dave. Go ahead.
I said crayons.
Crayons. Oh, very good. That's a good answer.
Went
That's
with
a
the
good
writing
answer.
Implement.
I like that.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
Very good. Thank you. Mary, what do you have? I apologize. Mary Sandberg, yes?
Rubber bands.
Rubber bands.
Why rubber bands?
That's a weird question.
Why rubber bands?
There you go. Mary's taking down the question. I like that.
That's all right.
All right, so we're moving on. Vandeveld.
I know. Mary Vandeveld, yes?
Time with it. I said inkblot? Like, you know, an old-fashioned ink thing? I couldn't think of anything.
Like an ink pad?
Inkwell.
Inkwell.
I said pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah, why'd you bring pizza instead of a pen?
Huh?
Yeah, well, because, you know, it's a celebration. And for 26, you bring pizza.
No, that's true. I would have said Abigail.
Oh, for... Oh.
That's a good one.
Oh,
okay, whatever. Or whatever.
All right, Ron, hold on.
The Ron, hang on.
Lead in the clubhouse is currently zero.
Work well.
Let's go to Ron on line two. This would be a separate Ron. Go ahead, John.
This is Ron from Bensonville.
Oh, Ron from Bensonville. Where in Bensonville, Ron?
No. This is Ron from Atlanta, Illinois.
Oh,
Atlanta,
sorry.
Illinois, home of the grain elevator.
Hey, Mary, stick with the show. Elevator. Stick with the program, Mary.
Sandberg.
Hey, Mary, look in my eyes.
Sandberg. All right, next question for Ron from Atlanta.
Ron, where is Atlanta?
Atlanta is smack dab in the center of Illinois.
And it's got the grain elevator, right, Ron? The big grain elevator.
Yes, Funk's Grain Elevator.
Hard to find those in the Midwest.
How far are you from Funk's Grove?
Oh, roughly about 8 miles.
Okay.
South.
Wow.
Okay. How about that?
Look at you.
Make fun of me. Way to go, Ron.
All right, work Funk's Grove into the question.
I got that. Ron, you know how the game is played?
Never played it.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is interesting. It's real simple. I'm going to give you a phrase, and you have to fill in the blank. And we'll see how many of the celebrities you can match. You ready?
Yes, yep. He's ready.
Okay. Steve Cochran's church is trying to modernize their Christmas pageant. Instead of three wise men riding camels, they rode in on blank.
Horses.
Horses. Very good. That's a real...
Good to see you going with the modernization.
He's from Atlanta.
Hold on, Ron. All right, where do you want to go first?
Let's start with Mary upstairs. Mary Vanderbilt upstairs.
Trying to write the word fast.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
The word fast.
No.
Is that your match?
Segways.
Segways.
Segways. Good answer. Yeah. Very good answer.
That would be modernizing.
That would.
Well, I know they're kind of out of it already, yeah. Aren't
Let's
they?
Let's go to Mary Sandberg down here.
Red Flyer Wagons.
Red Flyer Wagons. Oh. That's pretty
cool. It's good. Their 100-year anniversary.
You're going to fit the frankincense in there.
Yeah, that's your frankincense right
there. That's the biggest concern. That's good. Dave Ennett.
Uber.
Uber, very good. Yeah, very good. Good answer.
Took an Uber.
Two Ubers. Oh, my. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So Dave and Steve win.
Yes. So Dave and Steve are the only one to match.
The two Rons are tied at zero. Let's go to the tiebreaker here. It's Jim in Bensonville. Before I pick up Jim in Bensonville, why don't you just tell me what the question for Jim would have been had we had time?
Oh, sorry. His would have been, Mary Sandberg hates giving hugs because so many people who give her a hug grab her blank.
All right. Write down an answer if you would. Too many people will hug her and grab her blank. Let's see here. All right.
I put horses.
Horses is incorrect. Vanderbilt, what do you got?
I put her her rear.
Her booty.
Yep.
Booty. All right, David.
I got no answer.
No answer whatsoever.
Because I'm afraid I'll make her mad.
I said purse.
Grab very purse. Good. Very good.
Yes?
I said cheeks.
Cheeks.
You know
Which
what?
Ones?
That's a good answer because...
Tommy Lasorda licked her.
Yep.
Since nobody won, they're going to get... All of them are going to get an app gift card, Pleasing People Since 1936. Visit their store in Glenview or online at abt.com.
Congratulations to all of our losers. You're big winners on the Steve Cochran Show. This has been Match Game, and we're back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Hey, good morning, Dean Richards. And good morning, Dean Richards. Oh, that's right. He's in Los Angeles. Why am I trying to get him on the Channel 9? He's not at Channel 9. He's in Los Angeles.
Yes, he is. And Dean's report is sponsored by Hyundai.
And good morning, Dean Richards.
Steve, I'm in Los Angeles.
And what are you doing in L.A.?
I am going to be visiting our friend Jeff Garland later on today.
Oh, that's right. In his tidy whities.
I am headed over to the Sony studios, mm-hmm. to the Sony lot.
Will you be on the set of the Goldbergs?
I will be on the set of the Goldbergs, mm-hmm. and good talk with our pal Jeff and mm-hmm. his entire cast.
Give him my best, won't you?
Is there a question that you'd like to ask or anything that you would like me to...
I would like to know how many pair of tidy whities he has on set at all times. And is there, because TV and movie crews are overdone and the specialization of the jobs has never been more specialized, does Jeff Garland have an underwear wrangler?
I have done some extensive research in the underpants department, Steve, mm-hmm. with this mm-hmm. because that's basically Jeff's job on the show, to sit in a Barca lounger
in his underpants.
His underpants. Do you know that ABC has required him to wear several pair of underpants at the same time? That it's not just a single pair, that he has to wear like two or three pairs.
So there's not one, a wardrobe malfunction?
To make sure there's no wardrobe malfunction, to make sure there's, you know, that we don't see anything, mm-hmm. but also to also quote to make sure there's no movement or shadows.
I'm sure Jeff would verify there's no danger of that.
So,
you never see the full credits on a TV show, but I am almost positive there's an underwear wrangler.
I'm hoping to meet the underwear wrangler and be able to actually, you know, spend some one-on-one time with that person. And really, my only big question today is, do I show up wearing tidy whities for the interview? Is that weird when I show up on the set?
Just in your tidy whities?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Jeff would think it's funny.
It's Hollywood. I don't think it could be weird. Sandra Bullock, Kathy Griffin, and Sophia Vergara are all in the news. We'll get to all of that after traffic. But before we go to traffic, John DeCoss is here. John, say hi to John.
Hi, John.
Dean, how are you?
Hello from Hollywood, underwear capital of the world.
I know.
And John and his musical partners have come up with a new song for our friend Dave Ennett.
Oh, that's nice.
And I'd like you to
tell you how much after John wrote the Dean song.
Uh-huh.
I can't even tell you how much that changed my life.
Okay. Well, then keep it to yourself if you can't tell us.
I can't tell you because it, really
it didn't
did change my life one bit.
That's right.
But it sounds good when I say I cannot tell you how much it changed my life.
Well, I'm going to put you on hold so you can critically review this song that we're about to play. What's the setup for this?
It's real simple. Dave had said for a long time they had not played the original theme song. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm going to do a new one. But you inspired this, Dave.
I did?
You inspired this song, and I'm very proud of this.
Very excited.
So here is Dave Ennett's new song.
Thank you.
Isn't the best place to get an update. GN Radio is where I go. Mm-hmm. The man at the bottom and top of every hour with his signature Go Cats Go. Mm-hmm. Come over, get an update confirmation. It must be, trust me, give it a chance now. Turn the dial, stop. It's the man here on Steve's show. And then he starts to talk and now we're listening. Dave, we need your play-by-play. Your voice sometimes the only reason we stay. Come on now, we need a live feed. You call the games, it's all we need. Say, Dave, we wish you'd call the Bears. Bulls, Hawks, Cubs, and Sox is all that we need. All right now, do a live read. Come on now, do a live read. Dave, we love when your voice comes through. The best voice ever at NU. And we can't get enough of you. We all tune to Dave Ennett. And the best part about your booth is that the microphone smells like you. There ain't nobody else can do it like you. We all tune to Dave Ennett. And you, and you, and you. We all tune to Dave Ennett. And you, and you, and you, and you. We all tune to Dave Ennett. And you, and you, and you, and you. We all tune to Dave Ennett. And you, and you, and you, and you. We all tune to Dave Ennett.
Go Cats.
How about that? That is tremendous.
Wow. John,
that
I'm
is
honored.
So good.
I'm overwhelmed.
So we're in love with the smell of you, Dave, and not the shape of you?
Yes, it's the smell of his microphone. This is not official until Dean Richards gives us his critical review as one of America's great critics. Your thoughts?
I am I'm here with David Geffen right now in Los Angeles, and he wants to sign John to a multi-million-dollar deal. I had it on speakerphone. because that's what we do. That's what we do out here in L.A. And David Geffen and Clive Davis. Is he still alive, Clive Davis?
Yes, Clive Davis is alive. He's with you as well.
Yeah, they all they're fighting over who's gonna sign the deal.
What's that line again, John? It's the smell of his microphone.
The best part about your booth is that the microphone smells like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so wrong.
That's moving. Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift just called. She just walked in, and she also would like to do a remake, the video with you.
She'd well, that's fantastic, because Ed Sheeran's online, too, and he wants to sue us all.
And Dean, Dave just whispered in my ear that it just changed his life.
You can't imagine how much it changed his life.
I can't
tell you how much it changed my life.
That's right.
We'll come back with the list in just a second. Stand by, Dean. But in case you're wondering what song you were referencing that inspired you, well, I think it might have been this.
Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. Now my bed sheets smell like you.
That's when it gets weird. It's 8:22. We're back with that show business. Vanderbilt just dropped her. Vanderbilt's doing a face palm on the seventh floor. All right, what's the traffic look like? Follow that.
And the best part about your booth is that the microphone smells like you. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, channel 972.
312 Dexter. Caps, love that song.
The new Dave Bennett song getting rave reviews from coast to coast, from here to there.
Back to Dean Richards live in Los Angeles, where he is.
Rapper Kendrick Lamar just called me and wants to know how he can collaborate with John.
Of course, like all things related to this show, he has to
throw down some tracks with J-Man.
He has to work through Sandberg. Good luck. All right, let's go to the list. Sandra Bullock donating money to hurricane relief. What did she do?
How about that? $1 million. She donated $1 million to hurricane relief for the people in Houston yesterday, which is amazing. A lot of celebrities are doing it. And, you know, I say this over and over. People, you know, complain about the celebrities when they offer their personal opinions about things. There is this side also of celebrities who are incredibly, you know, usually first to step up with huge donations like this. And so that's worth mentioning. You want a little reality check. When I was getting here to Los Angeles yesterday, I got on the shuttle bus to go get a rental car. And there was a family, a mother, dad, and two little kids. They were talking about how, you know, they had just gotten out. They were from Houston, and they are not sure of the status of their house. I was talking with them on the shuttle bus, not sure of the status of their house, their car, their belongings, but they just got in the plane and came to Los Angeles, I guess, you know, to stay with family or friends or whatever. But that's we see it all on the news. So you actually talk to somebody and meet somebody who's gone through it, it's a whole different dimension.
No question about it. Well, good for Sandra Bullock. Meanwhile, on the other side of show business, what's Kathy Griffin doing?
You remember Kathy Griffin? She had that photograph of what looked like a decapitated head of the president. And she went on TV with her attorney and apologized and was all teary-eyed. And yesterday in an interview in Australia, she said she's retracting her apology. She is no longer sorry that she apologized for all that and that, you know, she was reacting too quickly about it. And she says the person who should be apologizing is President Trump for all that he's done, all that's happened over the last several weeks, that he's the one that should be apologizing to America, not some stupid comedian for doing a stupid joke.
Did she seek out this new round of publicity, or did someone go to her about this? The reason I ask is because she needs to not talk about this anymore.
Yeah, she's doing a tour, a world tour. She's going and doing comedy concerts. She happened to be in Australia when she made this comment yesterday, but you know, she's doing the usual rounds, as you comedians do, go, you know, make the rounds to promote your shows. And the hosts of the show, of course, asked about the controversy. So that's how it came up.
All right. Well, that's not her fault that it was addressed, but the less she talks about it for her sake, the better. What's Sofia Vergara talking about?
Remember, there has been this ongoing case of Sofia Vergara and her ex-boyfriend, Nick Loeb. They've been in a legal battle over the custody of frozen embryos that they froze quite a long time ago. It's got to be at least 3-4 years since.
That's when they thought they were going to get married and it would be forever, right? And all of that.
Right. So they broke up. Sofia Vergara, didn't want the frozen embryos anymore. Nick Loeb said that he did want the frozen embryos because those are his children, and he filed a lawsuit on behalf of the frozen embryos, claiming that they should go with the father of the frozen embryos. So this has been going on for years, this whole case, and yesterday a judge threw the case out, saying a frozen embryo cannot file a lawsuit. So thank goodness our long legal nightmare is over on that.
So this case is done now?
The case is done. The case is done, yes.
And what happens to the eggs? Seventh caller's a big winner?
Okay, sure. Maybe John can write a song about frozen embryos.
I guarantee
you
could.
Come on, song boy. Come on, little music man. Write a little song about
frozen
that.
Frozen embryos. Frozen embryos are my life. Song boy. Enjoy your time in L.A. When are you back?
I will be back tomorrow.
All right. Big day in L.A., and you'll rejoin us in the morning.
I'll have underpants update then.
All right. Tell Jeff hello from us. Back after this with the big story on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
844, a helpful listener sent me the Harris County Flood Warning System map showing the bodies of water in and around greater metropolitan Houston, what's within its banks, what isn't. It still looks like about a third of the county is probably having the majority of the problems, but a lot of what wasn't green before now is, and green represents water within its banks and its proper area, which would indicate that the water is going down, albeit slowly. We'll look for good news wherever we can get it. Meanwhile, is the work of Washington continuing? I know, stop smirking. I said the work of Washington. Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy joins us now. You know, Raja, I thought, after knowing you for a little while, be able to actually nail your last name. I still haven't pulled it off.
Hey, good morning, Steve and Dave. Thank you so much for having me on. I don't know if I told you this, but I recently approached an audience and introduced myself. Hi, my name is Raja Krishnamoorthy. And one guy came up to me and said, Roger Christian Murphy. Very nice to meet you. So people do with my name as they please, and that's fine.
Krishnamoorthy. I've got it. See, I knew I could do it.
Awesome.
There's a couple of pieces of legislation that you are working on out of your office I wanted to mention. With kids going back to school and back to college right now, there's a lot of kids who aren't necessarily right for a 4-year college education. That's perfectly fine. Are we doing enough on the community college level to make sure we're job training people for careers and for tech jobs?
We're starting to, but we're not doing enough. And you're right. You know, a 4-year college or university degree may not be for everybody, but an education has to be. And that means getting a certification or a credential or a skill set in order to get a job. And so what this bill does, it's officially dubbed the Thompson-Krishnamoorthy Act. It's the longest titled bill in Congress. It modernizes our career technical education laws to do two things. One, it basically moves authority from Washington down to states and the local level, specifically community colleges and high schools, to spend the money that we currently do on job training. And then secondly, it does something that really we haven't done before, which is it makes sure that job training dollars are spent in coordination with employers.
to make sure that, you know, the skills that we train our young people on, or people going through a career transition, are ones that employers want. And so I'm really excited about it. Congressman Thompson, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and I have worked hard on it, and it passed not only with bipartisan support but unanimously through the House. And now we're awaiting a positive outcome in the Senate, and then the White House has already signaled that it wants to sign it. So
I don't understand why the Senate wouldn't take it up immediately. What's the problem there?
You may have heard about what the Committee of Jurisdictions, the Health and Education Committee, was working on lately, namely Obamacare. And it just gummed up the works, quite frankly, in terms of preventing other matters from coming before the committee and then going to the Senate floor. I'm really hoping that they take this up. We desperately need a bipartisan win, Steve and Dave. And, this is one that, to me, employers, management, Democrats, Republicans, labor, and even Sox and Cubs fans can all agree on.
We're talking with Congressman Raja, and for the folks in your district, I know you get a lot of feedback all the time. We all were upset about what happened in Charlottesville, and the statistics about the rise in hate crime in this country are frightening and repulsive. What is the legislation you're hoping to get accomplished out of that situation?
Okay, so switching gears a little bit, with regard to that particular issue, I proposed a bipartisan independent commission to study the rise in hate crimes, extremism, prejudice, and bigotry that unfortunately have afflicted a lot of different people. You're seeing a huge rise in anti-Semitism, but you're also seeing, Islamophobia, anti-Hindu, anti-Sikh, anti-Latino, LGBTQ sentiment on the rise. And this is something that we have to deal with, and we have to do it on a bipartisan basis. I'm so heartened that so many Republicans condemn what happened in Charlottesville and then actually criticize the president and the administration for its initial response. Now we have to do something about it. It's kind of, the words are fine, the sentiments are okay, and now we have to do something. And so this is an idea that I hope gains steam on both sides. I should just mention one other thing. There's a group called Life After Hate that's based in Chicago. It's based in Chicago, and it's done a fabulous job of combating anti-Semitism, activity by Klansmen, and so forth. And unfortunately, the administration cut its funding, even at the same time that the FBI issued a report in the rise of white supremacism. And so Congressman Davis, in whose district that particular group is based, and I wrote a letter to the acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security basically questioning, why would you ever do that? Why would you, at the same time that you are, noting an increase in hate crimes, try to cut funding for a group that's fighting those hate crimes? So this is a big political problem that we're trying to deal with, and we're hoping that there's progress here.
Before I let you go, obviously funding for FEMA to take care as much as possible of the people in Texas is going to be a very important issue going forward. How much of the you didn't want to help New York and now you want to help Texas, we'll step up, even though you didn't Ted Cruz, even though you didn't John Cornyn, whoever. Are we going to hear a lot of that, or is this going to be fast-tracked as far as what you're hearing so far?
Well, first of all, all of our thoughts and prayers go to the victims of the hurricane, and I am heartened by the incredible acts of volunteerism and kindness. I heard about the Cajun Navy that's come into being to rescue so many people.
Yeah, how cool is that story?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The number of people that just came from all over the South and other parts with their boats to rescue people. It's such a, like you were saying before I came on, I think, there is a silver lining in this that we're seeing so many acts of bravery, courage, kindness coming out of this. With regard to FEMA funding, I should note that the president proposed to cut FEMA by $670 million prior to Hurricane Harvey. He also proposed to cut the National Weather Service, the National Flood Insurance Program, National Oceanic Administration Agency, which predicts these weather events, and he cut almost 10% of the budget for disaster relief. In my humble opinion, these types of cuts are ill-advised, especially in light of what's happened here with Hurricane Harvey. I think you're going to see a move to restore these monies because we got to prepare in advance for the next weather events that are going to come down the pike. And then secondly, I do think that people on both sides of the aisle are going to come together to provide relief for the victims of Hurricane Harvey. I mean, I think that this is, you know, this is, in my opinion, the role and function of government to aid people in their lowest time. And so I hope we come together on a bipartisan basis to deal with that. But I also hope that we pass a debt ceiling and a spending plan without incident. Without,
available in all states.
You know, hey,
drama.
Tracy, heard you started your own business.
Yep.
Stand by
1 second. Recent Arby's frozen yogurt vending franchise.
I'm
it's the latest revolution
sure
in healthy frozen yogurt.
Not what happened there. That was that me? Was that I don't know what happened there. We had a little
was
technical.
That the Russians?
We had a little technical issue there where suddenly there was a yogurt commercial in the middle of our conversation. I apologize for that. All well said by you, and less fighting and more accomplishments is what needs to happen. I think of the people of Washington, Illinois, not being able to get disaster relief on a federal basis at the level it should have come because of the money arguments at FEMA. And we need to get together the way the neighbors there and the way the militias there have stepped up and do the right thing. When people need help in this country, that's what we do. We step up.
That's right. I think we got to put the politics and rhetoric aside and just come together and do the right thing on this and a number of other issues, Steve and Dave. I think we have to learn a lesson from what we're seeing today in Houston and apply it in Washington, D.C. as well.
Thanks for the time. As always, would people want to contact you at your office? What's the website?
It's just www.krishnamoorthy.house.gov.
www.krishnamoorthy.house.gov. And when you tried to convince the government IT guy to just go with Raja, what did he tell you? We can't do that.
We don't. That's against protocol.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that. I said the same thing, and they said no way. If anybody wants to visit my website, you can just Google Raja, R-A-J-A, and you know, I'm the only one in Congress. I'm the only Raja in Congress. So,
all right, well, there you
you'll
go.
You'll find it pretty fast.
All right, my friend, thank you. I appreciate it, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. And it's time for Mary to do the traffic. CLTV will join us shortly. Karen Conti in studio next hour as well. Lots to do on this Steve Cochran Show at 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti's here. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Good to see all
Looking
of you.
Fabulous as always. Just before her vacation from Conti Attorneys at Law. the number at the office is
312-332-7800, or you can email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
I, of course, been up in arms over this Subway lawsuit thing that's going on. I don't know if you know this. The Subway foot-long sandwich may not be a foot-long.
Well, yeah. I mean, they got sued all over the place in about five different states, and they said that the foot-longs were not really 12 inches.
Haven't women been able to use this as a lawsuit for years?
I don't know what you're talking about, Steve.
A class action lawsuit by women. It could break the back of the male gender. So 12 inches is how is Subway defending this?
Well, it got dismissed. The judges here in Chicago said, listen, this is ridiculous. You start out with 12 inches, but when you bake it, sometimes it shrinks down. So you still get the same amount of meat and bread and all that stuff. And by the way, the participants in this class action are going to get nothing and the lawyers are going to get everything.
Right.
So the judges dismissed it, and probably all of them will be dismissed in the country.
Who started it? Do we know?
I don't know. You know, there's always someone who stokes the fire here.
Someone with a lot of time on their hands.
I mean, I just saw one, Steve, the other day where someone sued. It was a class action against Dunkin' Donuts for the idea that in their blueberry donuts, they're not really blueberries. They're just clumps of sugar with food dye. And I'm thinking to myself, do you really think that that's a fruit?
Here's the thing that I would alert everybody to consider prior to filing a class action lawsuit. Don't go there anymore. Don't spend your money there anymore. This is a nation of free will.
You know, that said, I do have to defend the idea of a class action because the idea is great.
The concept.
You know, the concept. I mean, we have safer cars. We have safer products and sure. medicines and things like that because there were class actions.
It's an important legal tool, but it's also a joke when it's done like this.
It is. It cheapens the whole thing. And the fact that you can have a group of people who have small claims actually get together and change an industry is very powerful, and I still think it's a good idea. But again, there's always going to be an abuse of a lawsuit and this concept.
All right, so we're going back to school. Everybody's thinking about, do I have my school supplies? Schools are funded, be able to stay in school. But you bring up something in the notes that I think is really important, and that is, what's more tense than how you're going to raise your kids in a divorce situation, and maybe even for newly divorced folks who got divorced this summer.
Right.
This is their first fall back in school right. under a divorce decree. So how about a back-to-school guide for divorce?
Sure.
What do we need to know?
Well, I think I've got some C's. Like, I've got consistency, communication, coordination, and compliments. How's that
wow.
for alliteration?
Look at you.
You know, consistency. One of the things that I see in my practice is when two parents are trying to co-parent, they need to understand this child has homework. And if the child is at dad's house on Wednesdays and mom's house on Thursday, there has to be a coordination of the project. When is this going to happen? Bedtimes need to be consistent. And parents will fight about that. They'll say, well, I think the child should go to bed at 9. And then there's a fight about it. But generally speaking, what I think a great idea is to go with the status quo. What was the status quo when you two were together? When the parties were together as mom and dad, the child was going to bed at 9. The child should still go to bed at 9.
Right.
If homework was between 5 and 6, that's when homework should be done. It should
sure.
be the same for this kid. And
yeah, you've rocked the kid's world enough.
You really have. And the issue, too, of coordination of sports equipment. You know, if the child's got to leave on Monday morning and is not going to come back to mom's house until Wednesday and has to carry all those books and all the sports equipment and maybe a band instrument.
Communication.
Yeah. And it's a lot of coordination and it's important. One of the other things that I say to my clients is think about the schedule. The schedule is probably in a court order, so you have to follow it. But you can also change it in the best interest of your child. And some people say, well, I want 50-50. Well, you know what? If you have one fewer day during the week, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe life isn't going to end. You know, your kid, you know, needs to have consistency and he shouldn't be going back and forth. It's very hard on children when that happens.
I asked Sandberg to jump in on this as well because she is a stepmom.
Yes.
And she seems to have a wonderful working relationship with the mom. Mm-hmm. You got any advice on this?
Well, we just had on Sunday, Pat and I and the kid's mom and their stepdad met for about 3 hours to go over this school year because you do set up the rules, but things change as they get older and need to be adjusted as far as how you're going to handle things. Like when
so you need to have a plan.
Right.
That was really refreshing to see parents and step-parents get together in these blended families and do the right thing, which is to work it out.
Right. And we talked without the kids because there's things like Catherine, after having a summer of no limits, you know, she's an eighth grader. We like getting the phone out of her room by 10 p.m. and, you know, in revisiting, like, actually
and the whole goal, I would assume, is to have both houses have the same rules, right?
Yes, and for them to know that we all four of us are
on
watching this because
it's a wonderful
thing. They're great kids, but they naturally work the system because who wouldn't? And so if they think, you know, like sometimes their mom will tell us something and like Patrick won't know that we know and then we'll say it and he's like caught off guard that we knew he got in trouble, you know, so like it's important when they know that we're all on the same page.
Listen, I salute you and Pat. And
it's a great thing.
But we don't, you know, it is difficult because not everyone agrees. And it's always easy to be on the one side of it and say, well, we think he should go to bed at this time. But then when he's at your house doing it, actually executing that ourselves is difficult. I always say recognize, though, because most of it falls on the mom, their mom. And so,
sure.
you know, it's easy for us to set up. We're all big on these rules because we aren't the ones that have to implement it most of the time. But about Karen said about the back and forth and back and forth, when the kids were littler and they first separated it, Pat had like a day during the week and then this weekend. And then it was, as they got older and they were in stuff, it was very difficult to do a Tuesday night and then every other Friday. It was messing with them. And so we strung our days together so that every other week they're with us the Thursday through Sunday, you know, so it's not, at least we're getting picked up and they stay for the 3 days and then go back instead of the every other day, because it gets crazy. It doesn't work.
And what the parents need to do is to put aside your own feelings and your own proprietary interest in your children and say, what is best for them? Watch them. You know, what is this really good for them to come for a two-hour dinner when they've got homework and they've got all this?
It's so disruptive.
Explain to me how that happens, though, from a lawyer's perspective, because your best-case scenario is to try to teach your very angry client, this isn't about you winning the fight.
Right.
This is about what's best for your kid.
It's really hard to do that, and because the people are keeping score. And, of course, you want to be with your child. I'm not saying that this is a totally selfish thing, but you want to be with your child, and you think that you want to exert that influence. And when you don't see your kid for 5 days when they're young, that's a long time to go. And some parents just have every other weekend, so it might even be longer than that. So you got to balance that. You've got to balance the relationship, and you've got to balance that child's need to have consistency. One of the things I wanted to bring up, Stephen, and sounds like in Mary's case, they have a good communication system, but there are these great programs now called like Talking Parents and Our Family Wizard, and they're very inexpensive. And what they do is it's basically a way to communicate, and it's a way to schedule things. It's also a way, so if you have school supplies and you're spending $200 on school supplies and maybe the spouse is going to contribute half, you can actually plug that into the program and then you can actually pay it. So those are things, doctor's appointments and school plays and all of those things can be scheduled there. So you don't really need to be calling and talking all the time or sending notices. It's all there on that program. Excellent.
I gotta tell you though, I feel badly for the modern generation of divorced parents in one regard, in that I love phone contact with my kids. Well, my kids are grown now. And Ross is in particular is on the phone all day. You know, I don't have any doubt that Ross loves me, but the last thing he wants to do is be talking on the phone after he gets out of work, after talking on the phone all day. And now in the text generation, where texting is the main way to communicate, it just feels like a bigger separation than ever for people once your kids are not in the house.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, younger kids don't like to talk on the phone, you know. But I think that what we see a lot now is Skype. There's Skype time.
FaceTime the kids. Pat FaceTimes the kids every single day. And though you do get them in a mood because you took them away from watching a show or doing something, but that's what I always remind him when he's like, well, that was productive. And it's like, hey, would you have wanted to break your thing to go talk to your dad on the phone? Like, you got to put it, you know, they're not always in the mood to chat with
him. Yeah,
you.
And I'm not against putting
a lot of...
And it's
selfish. It's for him. It's not really
Yeah, and I'm not against putting a lot of guilt on the kids. Say at some point, you're going to want college paid for and you're going to need a lot more money. I would suggest you play along with dad's game right now.
Right. Yeah,
but the FaceTime is great because you feel like you see him.
Right. Yeah.
So they're not gone as long as, you know, so.
Good point. And then, I want to get to your compliments piece,
Yes,
too.
Let's do the compliments piece. Sure.
All right, stand by. Let's do a commercial break first. We'll come back on 720 WGN. Jake, one of our texters asked about Karen Conti's theme music that starts her appearances here on the program. Is that the Perry Mason thing?
I think so.
Yes, it is.
Perry Mason?
I can confirm.
Yeah, Perry Mason. Just want to make sure everybody knew because they're asking. And you're on Sunday nights with Noonan?
I am from
Noonan!
8 to 9 on Sunday nights.
All right, good. We're talking about this kind of back-to-school guide for divorced or divorcing parents. Which C are we on?
Well, we kind of mixed them all up, but, communication, consistency, we talked about that. I think coordination, too, you know, getting access to school records. Now it's easier than it used to be. You can go online. They have portals where parents can both go on and get all the notifications. But, you know, do your spouse, your ex-spouse, a favor. When your kid comes home with the schedule that's in writing, you know, the typewriting or the softball schedule or whatever it is, scan it and send it to dad. Well, I mean, just do it. I think that kind of thing will alleviate a lot of problems and a lot of insecurity because the parent maybe who doesn't have as much parenting time feels like, I don't know what's going on. When are parenting sure conferences? Well, go look on the portal, first of all. Do it yourself. Don't expect someone to tell you. But if you get something in writing, you know, make sure the other person knows. You know what I love? I love when parents are at an event and they take a picture and they send it to their ex-spouse. Here, you know, here's a picture of something you missed. You know, maybe you were out of town on work or something. And I just love when parents share information about their children. It's just such a good thing to do.
It is a good thing. It's a healthy thing. And we also need to give credit where credit's due, to lead you into compliments here.
Yes.
For the newly married to the exes, because they have to be very, you know, understanding, tolerance, not the right word, but understanding of the situation as well.
Being a step-parent is very difficult.
Yeah.
You have a lot of responsibilities and not all of the good stuff, you know, because a lot of times kids will resent a step-parent and there's new rules in a new house and a new relationship. And there's, you know, you can feel the tension sometimes. But going back to the complimentary thing, I think this is really one of the most important things, Steve, because parental alienation, that is when a parent says bad things to their child about the other parent. One of the worst things you can do, the studies show, it's you almost better off beating your child than bad-mouthing the other parent. And here's why. The two people they love the most in life, they want to love them. And if the one person who they love is saying bad things about the other person they love, this causes confusion, it causes resentment, and it can lead to serious problems down the line. So I always tell people, no eye rolling, no derogatory things. Talk to your girlfriends about how bad he is, okay?
Yeah.
But to your children, your dad's the best. What did you do with your dad? That sounds fabulous. I'm so happy you had a good time with your dad. You know, here's a Father's Day card. Let's go get him a Father's Day card. All of those things are things you should be doing to encourage that great relationship, because parents need to know that their kids, like, the best role models. These are your two role models in life.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, to give your kid a healthy emotional background to go into their own life down the road and seek out healthy relationships,
exactly.
They need to see you do it the right way.
Exactly.
Because divorce doesn't have to be the end of the world for your family. It doesn't.
No, in fact, there's new studies out that show that kids from divorced families are, you know, they do okay, except when there's high conflict.
Right.
And except when you have parental alienation. So kids are very malleable.
What's the worst, when you ask the kids, tell your father this or tell your mother that?
Oh, it's awful. Bringing them into the legal system. I mean, I have six-year-olds who are saying to their parents, are you in court today with dad? I mean, none of these things should matter to a kid.
Right.
Did you get child support this week, Mom?
Right.
You know, never.
Right.
The kids shouldn't even be thinking about those things.
Now, let me take you down a different path here, because
sure.
We're talking about positive grown-up situations here. Not everybody's going to be positive and grown-up about it. So what about you're in a divorce situation, you're trying to do the right thing, the other person isn't. Do you have legal avenues you can take to try to be appropriately involved in school situations and have access to records and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, you can go back. First of all, the parenting agreements that turn out to be a divorce decree, they usually have all those things provided in there. Both parents have access to medical records.
And that's a legal document.
It's a legal document, but people don't always follow it. And that's the problem. You have one parent who's following it to a T and one is just shirking, you know, and not doing it. You can bring someone back to court. Generally speaking, I try to have it mediated first. So you get a mediator involved who can bring the parties together and say, hey, listen, Mom, tell Dad when there's a PTA meeting. I mean, Dad, you know, you do this. So mediation is good. Going back to court is expensive. You try to really avoid it because, you know, it's sort of like herding cats. It's hard to make somebody do the right thing on a day-to-day basis. And certainly parental alienation is really difficult to litigate because the eye rolling and the bad mouthing, they're going to be denied by the parent. And it's hard for a judge to come down on one parent or the other.
Now, I've known you for a long time. I'll let you go on this. You're the type of attorney who, if you handle a divorce case, you're not trying to start the fight or elongate the fight. You're trying to find out the best, do the best by your client, but also not do what a lot of attorneys are rightfully accused of. Not the majority.
Stoking.
But stoking the mm-hmm. fire, racking up the billable hours, and making it worse for everybody. If you're against an attorney who's doing that, what do you do? What's your recourse?
You know, it's really hard. I try to shame the other lawyer.
Right.
You know, I try to do that and make him aware. I think what you're doing, sir or ma'am, is stoking I think we should be problem solvers here. We're not fighters. We should be problem solvers.
Right.
And if you think about in terms of instead of winning, the winning should be a resolution that the parties come to themselves. I usually try to get the four people in the room, so the parties and the lawyers, so I can talk and I can say, I see what's going on here, and kind of bring it to everyone's attention that there is some of that going on in a very delicate way. But it's hard. It's hard when one party is stoking the other party's emotions.
As a profession, do you feel that it's trending in the right direction with divorce attorneys and it's not as bad as it used to be, that problem, or is it too soon to tell?
I see more people in a mediation mode, but I still see some lawyers who think if that's what my client wants, my client's angry, I'm going to be angry, my client will fire me if I'm nice, and that's the name of the game. It's just very difficult.
Can't be just the angry divorced parent that is trying to do the right thing. The lawyer has to do the right thing as well.
That's exactly right.
Karen Conti, enjoy your vacation.
Okay, thank you.
Nice to see you.
Happy Labor Day.
Thank you. Remember in the 70s when we used to play Doma T Pongo with the arcade? Beep! 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 9:45, why the Rocky music? Well, that's in the 70s as well. We're not doing a flashback here. The reason for the Rocky music, we had an unexpected guest in studio. I was out of town last weekend while Floyd Mayweather was beating up on Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
This morning we heard that the most decorated Olympic athlete of all time, Michael Phelps, says he wants to now challenge Conor McGregor not to a boxing match but to a swim in the pool. We don't know why. It doesn't seem to make any sense. We don't know that Conor McGregor can swim. We don't know why this is a good idea. So in studio to discuss some aspects of all of this, one of the great boxers of all time. Sir, what is your name?
Jack Dempsey. I fought from 1971 to 2006.
And you were one of the great fighters of all time?
For 12 years.
All right. And did you see the Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight?
No, I was watching the Floyd Barbarella-Conor McNugget fight.
I'm sorry, Conor McNugget?
Yeah.
And what is he famous for?
Well, one was a fighter. Was it, like a boxer guy like me?
Yeah.
Fight all those years. And the other guy, I think he worked for McDonald's.
I see. I'm going to guess that was Conor McNugget.
Right.
All right, fine. The fight was said to have gone 10 rounds with a TKO afterwards.
I don't know what they had to eat, like if it was catered.
I don't know what they had to eat either.
They might have had KFC instead of TKO.
Yeah, that's possible. It's possible. All right, now, Conor McGregor engages in something called ultimate fighting. Ultimate fighting is kicking, and it's punching, and it's a combination thing. Yet Floyd Mayweather beat him. Can you tell us why?
Well, yeah, he works at McDonald's.
Oh, so...
He's been trained as a fry guy.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe he could make a Big Mac or something like that, but he ain't a fighter. When you fight a guy, when you box at a guy inside the ring, you got to...
I'm sorry, inside where?
The ring.
Where do they fight? Inside what?
They fight inside the ring.
Is that like
the ice rink. No, yeah. Ice rink.
Oh, all right. All right, so they're fighting, and Conor McGregor... lost. All right, so now Michael Phelps wants to swim against him. Is that a good idea?
Well, no. Phelps could swim.
That's the most clear-headed thing you've said since the show started.
If you're going to, like Michael Phelps should say, hey, let's play Dominique Pongo.
Right. That would make more sense.
Apparently, this challenge was a joke.
Oh, it was.
Phelps was kidding around.
Oh.
That doesn't mean McGregor won't take him up on it.
Yes, he may have already tried to. For the kids that are listening that want to get into the boxing game, what do you recommend?
I recommend get headgear, number one.
Did you ever wear any?
No.
All right.
I don't believe in it. I just think you should get it. It should be the first thing you purchase.
Should you wear it?
No.
You should just own it? That's what you do? You just own the headgear?
That's good advice.
You buy a helmet, you just hold it up? What are you talking about?
You scare your...
What is this, Game of Thrones? Just hold a helmet up?
I don't get it.
I don't understand this at all.
You got to have it in your locker at all times.
All right.
It just has to be back up.
And when you were fighting for 12 years, what was your punch?
High C. Sometimes I'd have Orange Crush.
Mm-hmm. No Hawaiian?
No Hawaiian.
No, you can't. No.
Yeah, no, I understand.
No. If you're wearing the headgear, you can't drink as well.
Yes, I understand. All right, so the advice for the kids is
headgear. Right.
Your punch was
high C specifically.
Uh-huh.
Grape.
And is the fight game what it used to be?
No, when I did it, it was a long time ago.
That doesn't exactly answer the question. So, I mean, let me just try to explain a little bit more. Again, we're talking with Jack Dunphy, one of the great fighters of all time. Is it Dunsey? Dunsey? What is the name again?
Dumb C. D-U-M-B.
Right.
C.
Dumpsy. Right. Talking with Jack Dumpsy. And I've totally forgotten my question, but I think it involved the current state of boxing in America. Is it still strong?
It's even stronger than ever because now you could have a box delivered overnight with anyone.
I don't think that's what we meant.
That's how incredible boxing is. Like, you could call Amazon Primo, and the next day you get a headgear.
Wasn't Amazon Primo one of the guys you beat earlier in your
career? I did. He was 6'7", 562 pounds. And I beat him. He was from Italy, and I beat him.
Amazon Primo. Listen, a great conversation. I really feel like we learned a lot.
No, Scott, thank you for having me on the show.
Appreciate it. Obviously not impacted Dave at all by all his years in the ring. It's the great Jack Dumpsy.
Did you notice he said he boxed from 1971 to... 2006?
Yeah,
35 years?
Yeah, but he also said it was 12 years.
Yes. No, he said he had 12 good years.
Oh, that's what it was. I don't know. It's 9:51. The best guest guaranteed every day on the Steve Cochran Show at CLTV. This is 720 WGN. Hey, I want to play a clip here before we run out of time. It's Trevor Noah from The Daily Show. There's a lot of reasons to criticize Trump, and nobody criticizes him more than I do. But yesterday, one of the people that got criticism on the trip was Melania Trump for what her choice was of wardrobe. She had high heels on when she got on the plane to go to Houston, and stilettos. And by the way, looked great in them. And then changed into sneakers when she got on the ground. That somehow turned into a deal. The same way everything else does related to Trump. Here's the clip from The Daily Show.
People weren't talking about the nuclear missile that Kim Jong-un tested because Melania Trump apparently did something much worse. Yeah, you see, she went to Houston wearing high heels. Oh, and she's getting a lot of flack for it. Online predominantly, but it counts. And here's my thing. I don't know why anyone should care what anyone wears when they're on their way to help people. Like, people were like, why is she wearing those heels when she's going to help people? Like, who cares? Look at the Pope. You see how he dresses? Look at that. All white with giant bling. He looks like he's going to a P. Diddy party. Like, but we don't say, hey, he can't go out helping people dressed like that. And I know some people are like, Trevor, it's not about that. It's about sensitivity. You don't wear things like that to a disaster zone. And I understand that. But in Melania's defense, she lives in a permanent disaster zone, and that's what she always wears. That's what she always wears. Cut her some slack.
That's why he is becoming more and more relevant every day. He just took a difficult topic and made it funny with the help of 12 writers conveniently located to his left. But well done. By the way, there is a way to foster a pet that we'll bring up tomorrow for all the pets that are on the loose in Houston and suffering from this tragedy as well. If you want to help the victims of Hurricane Harvey, they urgently need your support, and the Red Cross is the way to go. Go to redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. You can also text the word Harvey to 90999 for an automatic $10 donation.